Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the next episode of your favorite podcast. It is Wednesday, November 19th, 2014. This is episode 11 of the FCK podcast, and this episode is fueled by a Bridgeport mix box that I picked up for the UGA Auburn game. I'm drinking number 3 out of that box. This is a session-style dry-hopped brown ale with nutty characteristics and piney hop notes. Quite delicious.
Yours sounds all serious. I'm drinking the number 1, and I'll just keep it simple. This is a crystal dry-hopped pale ale.
Shout out to Bridgeport. That's a local Portland brewery. This number 3 was the brainchild of students from the fermentation science program at OSU. How about that?
Good job, OSU.
Good job. Too bad your football team lost to my alma mater. Shout out to the Cougars.
They did beat Arizona State, though, so not too bad. So for this, the start of this episode, we're kind of turning a bit of a new leaf. We're not going to restrict ourselves in a way like we had before where we were talking more on set dates. So we're just going to look more big picture, and I hope you guys enjoy the new format. I think that you will. Also for this episode, we've got a special guest with us this evening. For our listeners that don't listen to Jim Rohn, let me give you a quick introduction to our next guest. This guest has made a name for himself in the jungle by doing a bunch of Neil Sedaka parody songs. This eventually evolved into straight-on Sedaka attacks on other clones, where he would customize certain songs, dissing on other clone members. We're very glad to have him on our podcast today, and I'll let Lance introduce himself a bit more. For those that don't follow him on Twitter, Lance is known as Lance in Topeka, so you can kind of guess where he's from.
Can you go ahead and give the full form? Because it's Lance_in.
So his Twitter is @Lance_in_Topeka.
Pleasure to have you with us tonight, Lance.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Also, big shouts out to our other Midwest affiliate, another Click associate, Mr. Kojak Delta, the KC Masterpiece. What up?
All right, so Lance, the first question I wanted to ask, you mentioned when we first got together that you wanted to talk about Kansas sports. So how long have you lived in the area to become a fan of those local teams?
Give us a recap of your resume, your credentials, so to speak.
Well, aside from a 2 or 3 year stint when I was in grad school in Louisville, that's when I was known as Lance in Louisville on the Jim Rohn Show. I've pretty much lived in Kansas all my life. I've been a Jayhawk basketball fan for pretty much as long as I can remember. I think my dad took me to my first KU basketball game at Allen Fieldhouse when I was in first grade. That would be what, 1994, I think it was. But anyway, I've been a KU basketball fan pretty much all my life. It was such a joy to see the Jayhawks win the national championship in 2008. And I've been a fairly good fan of KU football. I was a big fan of the teams that Mark Mangino put out on the field. Really miss him. Really miss how he got us to all those bowl games. And I'm wondering if we'll ever be able to match that success again. I don't know that we can. And I'm more of a casual fan of the Chiefs and Royals. I mean, once in a while I'll sit down to watch a Chiefs game when the team's having a good season or when they're winning or something like that. I'm glad to see the Chiefs win. Glad to see them having a good season. And the Royals, well, I just haven't had a lot of time for the Royals, partly because for most of my life they've sucked. But, I got on the bandwagon. I watched their games when I could during the postseason. I listened to their World Series games, so yeah, I might be a bigger fan of the Royals going forward. So in that order, I would consider myself a Jayhawk fan first, Chiefs fan second, Royals fan third.
Now, you see, I knew that there was a reason that this collaboration was bound to succeed. The FCK pod has actually adopted Joel Embiid as one of our official heroes due to his Twitter antics.
And mostly because of his dancing skills as well. The Nay Nay is one of my personal faves.
So, Lance, did you the Nay Nay? Lance, did you get a chance to see Embiid in person when he was a Jayhawk? And also, what do you think of his overall prospects as an NBA player?
Yes, I did get to see Joel Embiid. It was He was a joy to watch. It was a joy to watch his jams and his dunks. It was a joy to watch him play defense. It was a joy to watch him intimidate anyone who tried to go up against him at the basket. He was probably the one defender on that 2013-14 KU team that was reliable. Without him in the lineup, KU's defense was much more vulnerable. And as we saw, without Embiid, Kansas was just not able to sustain a long postseason run. They kind of fizzled out in their last seven games with him sitting on the bench with those injuries. But if he can stay healthy, I think Embiid has the chance to be has a chance to really make an impact for the 76ers and help turn that team around.
So, speaking of the 76ers, can you see yourself cheering for them when Embiid returns from injury? I mean, can you really cheer for a team that basically is systematically tanking to levels that we have really never seen before? And, if there's a draft lottery reform, I mean, we may never see again.
Let me say this. I really don't have a favorite NBA team, per se. I wouldn't cheer for a team that was systematically tanking or anything like that, the way the 76ers or the Lakers are tanking. But I really don't have a favorite NBA team. There's not been a NBA franchise in Kansas City since the Kings left for Sacramento back in the mid-80s. And so I really don't have a favorite NBA team. I'm glad for those former KU players who are on NBA rosters, and I want to see them do well and make an impact. But, I really don't have a dog in the fight when it comes to the NBA. So,
well, that is admirable for you to not align yourself with another team after the Kings left town. I look at your situation similar to that of a displaced Supersonics fan. I mean, what is he or she left to do? Become a OKC fan or become a Trailblazers fan or option C and just abandon the NBA altogether? I really think this tanking trend is something that needs to be discussed, and I think it can be addressed with a little bit of draft reform.
Yeah, so speaking of draft reform, here's one thing that happened recently. On on October 22nd, the owners actually voted to not make any changes to the lottery system. 17 owners did vote yes, and 13 voted no. So the majority did side to have reform. However, to have changes that large, the NBA required 23 votes yes, so they were a little bit short there. They're going to do some more studies and come up with more proposals, and then they're going to get back into that topic at a later date.
So the current system, I feel, and we discussed this offline, I believe, we had said that the current system, the lottery system, is one of the best as far as the four major spectator sports drafts go. You want to go ahead and break down what the current system is entails?
Yeah, and I mean, speaking on that, as messed up as it is to see a team intentionally tank, the fact that you aren't guaranteed the top overall pick for having the worst record, like comparing that to the NFL, I think it does work in that regard. So as far as the current system, if you have the worst record in the NBA, you have a 25% chance of landing the top pick. So immediately, that does have a bit of a de-incentivizing...
It curbs the chances, I agree.
Yeah. So then, like, comparing that now, if you have the second worst record, you have a 19.9% chance. Third worst is 15.6. Fourth worst is 11.9. And if you are the first team not in the playoffs, so the last team in the lottery at 14th, you have a 0.5% chance to land the top overall pick. So
okay.
The proposal was going to basically take the four worst and give them all nearly an identical 11% chance. So immediately then you're basically taking the top four, the four worst teams in the league, and giving them an equal shot at the number one overall pick. I think clearly this is geared at stopping Philadelphia from getting another pick just by being bad.
Well, hey, let's not discount Team Tank Top down in LA right now. Despite beating our Atlanta Hawks in Atlanta last night, they're on pace to set records as well. They're 2-7?
Yeah, they're looking pretty bad. Yeah, they're looking pretty bad too. So then the other thing there, for comparison's sake, the last team out of the playoffs would have a 2% chance. So that's four times greater of a chance to get into the playoffs. I'm sorry, to get the top pick, even if you're, you know, right on the cusp of making the playoffs. I think that while it's a good idea to try to stop a team like Philadelphia from just outright losing and just planning on losing constantly from getting the top pick, I think that you open up a bigger can of worms by allowing the four worst teams an equal chance. Because what if like you said with the Lakers, they're going to have a down year this year. So they don't have to have as bad of a down year to have an equal chance at getting the top pick.
Right. So, I mean, does it just shift the incentive to the bottom four teams instead of the bottom one? But I mean, in this case, the bottom one and the bottom two teams both have a roughly 20%. I mean, 20% in bad, 20 and 25% to get that top pick. But in all honesty, I think that the league needs a lot of reform. Because, I mean, to tell you the truth, I don't even really pay attention to the NBA until playoff time. Other than fantasy reasons, that's about it.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that one thing that's really picked up a lot of traction, at least in my own mind, is the concept of redoing the whole playoff seeding and just going with the top 16 teams, regardless of conference designation. I mean, the Western Conference has gotten so dominant at this point that, you know, you could get 10, you know, or 12 teams from the West that are you know, deserving of getting into the playoffs, whereas like in the East, I mean, the Hawks got the 8th seed last year and had a losing record.
We've been sub 500 and limped into the playoffs, I'd say, in rough estimation, 6 out of the last 10 years.
Yeah, and I mean, I think
it's probably just more than that.
Yeah, and I think just from a competitive standpoint, I think it just makes more sense. You know, just, you know, the conference thing was brought up in the era of team buses and long road trips. The era that we're playing in now features chartered flights, if not private jets.
Right.
You know, so it's there's no need to divide, you know, conferences. I mean, you could still do that for like regional purposes and what have you. But when it comes to playoffs, I think a great step would be just let the top 16, you know, teams in regardless of what conference they played in.
Exactly. And it's a little hard to say that being a lifelong diehard Atlanta Hawks fan, because I always like to see us in the playoffs just so I have someone to root for. But at the same time, it's not necessarily a bad thing to take 12 teams out of the West if the 12 teams from the West are that much better. You know, if the bottom four teams from the West are that much better than the bottom four teams from the East, I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah,
it makes for better basketball.
Yeah, and that's, like you said, that's perfect. I mean, it makes for better basketball, and let's make the incentive, be a better team. You know, you want to get to the playoffs, all right, let's be better than 500, you know?
So here's an extreme case. We had talked about it offline previously, and it was brought up again over the weekend, over the Georgia-Florida weekend, by none other than Mr. Stanquan Bolden, Stan Lanier. He was saying, you know, he was on the same page as you, saying that we need to have a relegation strategy where we take the top 16 teams, let them compete in a playoff system, and then take the bottom 14 teams and relegate them to a B league, you know, not really a... Well, I mean, yeah, there's no other better way to say it, a second-tier league that doesn't actually compete in the playoffs. And we take, you know, let's say, for example, the top two teams. So the 14-team B league would have a playoff system in place as well, and the winner and runner-up would then qualify to be promoted into the first-tier league, whereas the bottom two teams in the first-tier league are then relegated down to the B league.
Yeah, I think that it would make a lot of sense. I've been following the Premier League soccer for several years now, and I really like their relegation and promotion system. Now, granted, this would take so many years to actually put this all in place because they have, you know, there's at least, I want to say, seven different tiers of teams, with the Premier League being the top. So the way that works there is that the bottom four teams, if you finish in the bottom four, you're relegated down into the championship, which is the next level down. Whereas the four best teams from that league then move up. For them, that's huge in terms of sponsorship dollars, in terms of jersey sales and overall money merch flowing in. Yeah, I mean it's huge for a team to maintain or to gain promotion and then maintain that spot in the top league. And then another big incentive there is that the top four teams that finish each year go into the Champions League, which is the big international tournament throughout all of Europe, and then the next three teams get into the smaller Europa League. I think that concept is too far out, just because there's not enough competitive basketball played, let's say, in the Americas between North America, South America,
right,
and what have you. I don't think there's enough to do that, but I think, I mean, we talked about it before as far as how can we get the NBA DL better integrated into the NBA itself, because it's just a general mess as far as how it's set up, and you know how NBA teams are using the NBA DL to develop players. This could actually be something that could help integrate that more into the NBA, and it would be tough. I mean, it would take a lot of work, I think.
I agree, and I think we're way far away from doing that. It's a radical change, and it makes a lot more sense in a much more international sport, especially in Europe, where there's not as much, you know, there's a lot more concentration of talent as well as proximity of talent in those leagues, the English Premier Soccer League, for example. But I think it's something to consider. I think that the NBA needs shaken up, because remember when we had that short season a couple years ago? I want to say it was abbreviated. It was a 60-game season.
Yeah, it's a strike-shortened season.
That felt really good. I mean, other than the whole strike situation, the 60 games as opposed to 82, I really didn't miss those other 22 games.
No, and you know what? I didn't either. And I think that's a great idea there as well. I mean, we dog on baseball all the time for having 162 games. It's getting to the point now where, you know, 82 games is a bit of a stretch. I mean, if you space it out better, then I think it's okay. If you're playing 82 games over the course of several months, why are teams playing back-to-back games?
Right.
That doesn't make sense to me. You know, and then having stretches where you'll play like, you know, three games in the span of 4 days. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense. I mean, you're already stretching out the overall length of the season. I mean, if you're gonna have 82 games, then space it out so nobody has to play back to backs. Or I like the concept of abbreviating the season to 60 or even 70 games and making the games a little bit more meaningful.
I would take a 60 game season and an expanded 16 team playoff bracket 7 days a week. It would just make for more entertaining basketball for me as a fan, I think.
Yeah, and I think another interesting concept that Adam Silver has been talking about is having that mid-season tournament. It's similar, again, looking back at the English Premier League and European soccer, it would be like the local cup competitions that they have, where you have it's completely, it runs at the same time as the regular leagues do, as the regular season does, but you have a champion that's crowned there, and of course there's more benefits there for the winners and the runners up, which again we can't really have that because there's not as much of an international flair unless you really want to dip into Europe and their basketball leagues, which I don't think we're ready to do that just from a logistical standpoint.
Right.
But I think it would be kind of cool to have that mid-season kind of tournament there where everybody can get in. It's a lot of change, you know, and a lot of fans have been opposed to that just because it is change. Just like they're talking about, everybody's so up in arms about, well, I don't want to have soccer style jerseys where there's sponsor logos everywhere. You know, it's just another one of those situations where change is different, and change, you know, can look weird at times. But you know, I think change in this case could be good.
I think it could be great, and I think that, I relish the day that we start talking about, oh well, the Hawks got to make that Euro swing. You know, we're gonna play 8 games over in Europe over the next 12 days, for example. You know what I mean? Instead of talking about the West Coast swing. You know what I'm saying? When teams from the back east fly to the West Coast, play 6 games, and then fly back home for a homestand.
Oh, yeah.
Can't wait.
Yeah, it's huge, man. And I mean, the more that I get into European soccer, I mean, the team that I follow, like when you get into like the Champions League, for example, Manchester City has huge games, and they're playing in Rome. They're playing in Russia. I mean, it's like, it's huge. And I think that eventually, with a sport as global as the NBA, it would be really awesome to see, you know, NBA teams, you know, competing against the Real Madrids,
Olympiacos.
The Olympiacos, you know, all these other, you know, all these teams. If you're gonna crown a world champion, we need to include the rest of the world. I mean, that's just one reason to do so.
Word. Speaking of Olympiacos, shout out to Gorgou. Happy birthday. It's probably beyond midnight over in Greece right now, but shout out to Gorgou. What's happening?
Yeah. Happy birthday, man.
Let's take it back to the Americas, and let's talk a little bit about football, college football. You want to bounce it back? You want to go ahead and make them dance?
Lance, make them dance. Lance, make them dance. Okay, getting back to our guest. Lance, thanks for hanging on with us while we went off on that little tangent there. So, getting back to Kansas, and as my brother alluded, football in particular, let's talk about one of the far less heralded sports products coming out of the Midwest, Kansas football. I mean, I'll admit so as much to the fact that I only paid attention to them during the Mark Mangino era.
I only pay attention to K-State. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean,
apologize.
Yeah, those Kansas teams and that coach. I mean, that was a sight to behold. I mean, I forgot that they went to and won a BCS game. They won like the Orange Bowl, I want to say. Yeah, so they were legit for a real short period of time. Getting back to you, Lance, what are your thoughts on how the football team can get things turned around?
It's just broken my heart to see what's happened to the KU football program ever since Mark Mangino was unceremoniously forced out. You know, it's just heartbreaking to see KU go from Orange Bowl champions to rock bottom in the Big 12 and barely relevant in our own state. I mean, Turner Gill was a total idiot. He had no business coaching in an FBS program. And, you know, when Shayon Zenger fired him and replaced him with Charlie Weiss, I thought, you know what? This is going to work. This is going to bring us national attention. This is going to bring us all kinds of good recruits. Wise is going to make this program a winner. No one could possibly be worse than Turner Gill. Of course, we were wrong. He wasn't worse than Turner Gill, but he was just about as bad. About the only difference between Gill and Wise is that Wise was pretty good at pretending like he knew what he was talking about. So, anyway, I'm glad to be rid of both Gill and Wise. And as far as who should replace Wise, my preference would be the Ohio State offensive coordinator, Ed Warner. You know, he was one of the offensive masterminds behind KU's Orange Bowl run back in 07. I'd like to see him get the head coaching job. I wouldn't object to Clint Bowen, though, getting the head coaching job, though. I mean, he did get that win over Iowa State, and he nearly did pull the win, the upset over TCU. You know, I wasn't a big Clint Bowen fan before the TCU game, but after seeing him nearly pull the upset, I'd be okay with him getting that gig.
You know, Lance, this needs to be pointed out. Anybody that can talk about offensive coordinators and their ties to your school is a friend of the FCK podcast.
Anyone who can draw the lineage between current Ohio State coaching staff members and members from the Mangino era is A-OK USA. Let's talk a little bit about baseball, though. I know our other Midwest correspondent, Mr. Kojak Delta, is still licking his wounds after that teaser of a World Series that we had. Big shouts out to the San Francisco baseball Giants, though. We had talked about how if you win 3 out of 5 years, World Series style, you're a dynasty at that point.
We'll pick that topic up in a little bit, though, man. I got a question to pose regarding the Giants' purported dynasty.
Oh, you got something else to say about that?
I got something to say.
Word. Well, check this out, Lance. Tell us a little bit about how deep your fan roots dig with the Kansas City Royals.
Like I said, I'm not a huge Royals fan. I pretty much tuned them out for most of my life since they've sucked pretty much for most of my life. But, you know, it was good to see them get back into the thick of things. It was good to see them make that magical postseason run. Kind of made me wish my great-grandmother was still alive to see them. She was the biggest Royals fan I ever knew, followed them through thick and thin, and it was just made me think of her. It was really good to see the Royals make that World Series run. It was a once-in-a-lifetime feeling, and I hope it's something we don't have to wait another 29 years before we see it again. But as far as the Royals not winning the World Series, it was disappointing. But, you know, we just didn't have it. If we had a Madison Bumgarner-like pitcher, we might have won that thing. And I don't fault the Giants for putting Bumgarner in the last few innings of Game 7. I would have done the same thing if I were the manager of a World Series team in Game 7. The Giants did what they had to do, and congratulations to them for doing it. I just wish things had turned out differently for the Royals, but hopefully there'll be more World Series trips to come during my lifetime. So,
hopefully. I mean, it's always good to see a small market team make it to the World Series. It's always a great storyline, and I thought that was cool what you shared there about your grandma, because I think that that's not really seen too much these days. I mean, not to mention that grandmas are what, like 36 these days?
Maybe 40.
Exactly. You know what I'm saying? But like, no one has that same affiliation with a sports team that the previous, or I should say, the previous generation has with their sports team. So, you know, just like you, I really wish that your grandma's around to see that World Series run. And, you know, best wishes to the Kansas City Royals in the future. But I'm also glad that you brought up the Madison Bumgarner situation. That was just, I mean, I honestly think that's how baseball teams should play in the playoffs, period. You know, we saw it with Randy Johnson as an Arizona Diamondback in the early 2000s. I want to say it was against the Braves, if I'm not mistaken, when he came in on short rest to pitch three innings and close out a game to advance to the next, or maybe it was even the World Series. I can't recall. Stat Guy, can you check that out for us? Appreciate it. We talked about it on a previous episode of the podcast about how the Royals may not be poised to make a long-term run at the playoffs, given the fact that they had a lot of contracts that were coming due next year. I want to say Billy Butler was one of the ones we mentioned. We'll have to rewind a little bit, run it back to a few old episodes of podcasts to see how accurate our list was there. But how do you feel about your chances now that Billy Butler has decided to sign? Do you have the details on that contract?
Yeah, he signed today, actually. Excuse me, with the Oakland A's. Butler went with a 3-year, $30 million deal. I mean, we all knew going in that this was going to be the end of this this era with that you know, with this roster. There just wasn't going to be enough money to spread around for all the stars, you know, like Billy Butler.
Yeah, I'm sorry to see that Billy Butler is leaving Kansas City. But the Royals just don't have the payroll to pay their superstar, and I can't say that I blame him for going somewhere we can get paid more. And I just wish him the best. I'm sorry we can't keep him in Kansas City, but I'm thankful for what he did while he was over here. I thank him for making the Royals relevant again, and hopefully we can get someone who can replace him and works the same magic.
Well, I don't know if you're aware of this, but I hear that Dan Uggla's on the market right now. The Braves are going to be paying about $13 million a year for the next 2 years on that deal.
I think we're only on the hook for one more.
Well, right on. So you really only have to pay him like $10 million because we're already paying him $13. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, please, somebody, anybody, take Dan Uggla. Take B.J. Upton while you're at it, too.
Or maybe Dan Uggla can just go ahead and start publishing his workout DVDs featuring 500 wrist curls.
Hey, you know, whatever works, man. It looks good on him. So let me, I want to take a moment here, Lance, and excuse me. One, clear my throat, and two, I just wanted to point out the fact that, man, your presence on the Jim Rome Show is a lot different than what we're getting here on this podcast, and it's really cool. I mean, we can certainly appreciate someone that has great sports takes, and it's definitely a pleasant surprise to come from somebody that isn't necessarily known for their sports takes, at least not on your call-ins. You said you had these takes, and you're definitely delivering, man.
How do you discount someone's sports takes when he's got something as vicious as a Sadak attack in
that's
his
true.
Back pocket?
But that's, I mean, it's such a strong brand that you wouldn't think that, you know, he doesn't even get a chance really to dive into sports takes because he's too busy dropping Sadak attacks.
I think we're really showing that Lance in Topeka is more than a one-trick pony.
Lance can make him dance.
He can. That's what I heard.
So anyway, Lance, so with all that said, how about some takes on the Kansas City Chiefs?
Well, it's good to see the Chiefs having a good season so far. I mean, they've done, what, won 7 of their past 8 games after a 0-2 start. But Andy Reid's doing a good job with this franchise. He's got them playing team ball. He's got them playing exciting ball. I was really impressed with their grinding it out against the defending Super Bowl champion Seahawks. You know, I like what Andy Reid's doing here. It's good to have some good coaching here in Kansas City. Haven't had that since Dick Vermeil was roaming the sidelines for the Chiefs. And it's just it's good to see the Chiefs getting hot. I'd like to see them win a playoff game, though. It's been, what, 20-plus years since that's happened? I was, what, kindergarten, first grade, the last time they won a playoff game? Well, whatever it was, it's been ridiculous. I think Kansas City needs to make some noise in the playoffs. I think they need to make themselves nationally relevant again. I'd like to see that happen, and I'd like to see the Chiefs win a Super Bowl sometime in my lifetime. Last time it happened, my dad was just getting into junior high, and so it'd be a real treat to see the Chiefs in the Super Bowl someday. So,
well, I think that with an able coach such as Mr. Andrew Ryan, I mean, I think you guys are in good hands. He's, I think he got an unfair rap a bit in Philadelphia, and he's showing that he's more than a capable head coach.
He's a man amongst boys.
He most certainly is.
I don't know if y'all remembered that video of him in the pump, pass, and kick where he stood about 6 feet tall, 180 pounds, in the sixth grade.
everybody's checking his ID. It's like, come on, man, that guy's got a full mustache.
Man, I saw him drive himself to this.
I know. It's like his dad's not even here, man. He's got a learner's permit already. So
I think I saw him drinking a beer in the parking lot.
That's how he got so loose and won the damn thing. So Lance, getting back to jungle related topics, you mentioned earlier that you've got a kind of a running beef with another clone who's actually also from the area, Mr. Ryan in Wichita. You care to explain that a little bit?
Well, my beef with Ryan in Wichita goes back to the hack-off, actually. See, I was looking for a way to win the hack-off in 2013 when Rome invited me, and I was thinking, how can I work this to win? So, as I recall, Rome told me, if you're going to come to the hack-off, you better come with the thing that got you there, parodies. And so I thought, how can I get on Rome's good side? Well, A, do a parody, and B, go after someone who he has a beef with, Ryan in Wichita. I mean, we've all heard how Rome talks about how he dislikes Ryan's calls, how much Ryan brings him down every time he calls, emails, or tweets. So I thought, you know, maybe I can earn some brownie points with Rome if I go after Ryan. So I went after Ryan, and Sadak attacked him, of course, in the hack-off. I should have won that thing, and would have if Casey in Pensacola hadn't screwed it up for everybody with his 27 seconds of numb nuttery. But yeah, as far as I'm concerned, I should have been the hack-off champion. And if Casey hadn't ruined it for everybody, we could still be having hack-offs today. But that's how that started, the whole thing with Ryan in Wichita. It's just a shtick. I think he's cool. I like him. And our exchanges on Twitter, nothing more than, you know, two guys just ball breaking on each other for the fun of it. And I have to keep that in mind. We take it too far sometimes, but we're just joking with each other. And I'll still do parodies about him from time to time.
You know, rest in peace to the hack-off. I think Rome put that out to pasture. Not sure if that's ever going to come back. But that was definitely some good times, you know, the exchanges, you know, between you and Ryan and some of the other hacks that were invited to the event. So now for those that follow along on Twitter, I mentioned a surprise involving you, Lance, and here's the big reveal. Lance recently had a song that got run that was only a few seconds in. I mean, it was literally just the opening segment of the song, and then Rome cut him off. So now here on the FCK podcast, we're proud to bring you an exclusive
world premiere,
the entire Left in Laguna Beach song. So without further ado, take it away, Lance.
Yeah, about that. I was going to do a parody about Left in Laguna Beach. And looking back, as I listened to how that went down on Rome when he didn't really give me the setup and just decided, you know what, let's just do this, and then ran me before I could even get through my intro, I think he was kind of in a bad mood or something at the time, and I happened to be the wrong guy in the wrong place at the wrong time. But now that I'm here, let me go ahead and do that parody about Lef. So, Lef, if you're listening, prepare to get smashed over the head with the music of the platters. Bottom all left is a big pretender. Do do do, pretending that he's got the game. Do do do, he thinks he's gold, but the truth be told, and the smack he likes to talk is so lame. Whoa left is a big pretender. Do do do, he sounds like a 6-year-old girl. Do do do, he makes me sick, just like no Calvic. I hear his voice and I wanna hurl. Do do do, this guy must be high on a ton of cron, and this guy ought to die just like old Bigotron. Whoa left is a big pretender. Do do do, I hate it when he starts to screech. Do do do, you had your fun, but now you're done. Get off the phone, you blood-sucking leech. Go back to peddling weed on the beach. On the beach.
So, you know what that means, ladies and gentlemen. That means left in Laguna Beach, you are now on the clock. We're glad to hear your rebuttal exclusively here on the FCK podcast. So, let's make that happen. With that, we'd like to go ahead and give a big thanks to Lance for taking some time out to join our podcast. Definitely looking forward to linking up again in the future to talk more sports, maybe do more parody songs, and more good times. Guys, make sure to follow Lance. He is, again, at Lance_in_Topeka.
Big shouts out to Lance. We really appreciate you dropping some knowledge on us this evening. I'm really liking what we got going on here. You know, two classic city transplants out on the West Coast, and somehow we found ourselves with two Midwest correspondents. I like it.
For sure. So with that, you know, with all that, we're going to cut this, go ahead and cut the podcast up, you know, off a little bit early. The interview with Lance, I mean, again, was so good that, you know, we just didn't have a chance to get to talking about all these other topics. So, I mean, the other things that we did want to get to talking about, Todd Gurley, you know, yep, messed his knee up after coming back from, you know, from a 4-game suspension.
That's a big one. I really want to dissect that one, and I'm hoping to get Mr. Peacock on for that discussion as well.
No, for sure. I'd love to get his to hear his opinion on that whole situation. You know, one thing that that interested me also is Wisconsin running back U. They hold all of the major running back records, you know, with Melvin Gordon running for 408 yards in 3 quarters.
Yeah, man. You could say that.
I mean, they now hold, Ron Dane has the most career rushing yards, Monty Ball has the most career rushing touchdowns, and the most rushing touchdowns in a season, and now Melvin Gordon, after torching Nebraska, has the most rushing yards in a game.
You know what I hope, though? I hope Melvin Gordon translates his skills to the next level much better than Ron Dane and Monty Ball have.
For sure. I mean, jury's still out on Monty Ball. I think he'll be all right. You'll give him another season or two to kind of, you know, kind of get into NFL game ready. Oh man, today is the 10th anniversary of the Malice at the Palace.
No joke.
Yeah, so 10 years ago,
Steve Jack slugged a fan in the face while slipping to the floor. 10 years ago,
Ron Artest tried to take on half the city of Detroit. Probably would have won. Be honest, especially with Steven Jackson on, having his back.
As long as they could fight him two at a time.
Yeah, for sure. Just tag team only. And then, you know, the other big thing to talk about NFL-wise, man. I mean, we talked about how we hate to bring up the topic, but Adrian Peterson's in the news again. This time, he's being suspended for the rest of the season without pay. So that was another topic that we can look to pick up maybe in episode 12.
Yeah, we'll shelf that for the future episode. I also wanted to discuss Jason Hayward right after the Billy Butler discussion that we had. I think it's pertinent that we discuss one of the great Braves leaving the organization
for, sure.
for greener pastures in St. Louis.
Yeah, for sure. And then we never got a chance to do the Giants talk. But you know what? We want to get this episode out to y'all because we really enjoyed it. Had a great time interviewing with Lance, and we want to make sure to get that out sooner than later. So we'll set these topics aside, try to pick up on some of these on episode 12. In the near future. So, thank you guys again for tuning in. We are the FCK Podcast. Check us out on Twitter at FCK Pod. Facebook is facebook.com/FreshCoastClick, KLIQ.
Check us out on theclicknation.com, same spelling, KLIQ nation.com.
And other than that, man, good to be back in the saddle. We didn't even talk about your cocktail party,
man. That's for episode 12. We're gonna have Mr. Peacock on. We're gonna discuss it. Don't worry about that.
That's gonna be good. So hope to catch you guys on the next episode. Stay fresh, y'all.